Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland. I don't have anything clever today, Fred. How are you?
I live, suckers. doing all right. Just honestly, I haven't been watching much wrestling the past, since the start of the year, basically, because of my schedule. But I have been able to get caught up a little bit on the AEWs this week, and looking forward to talking about that and the awards. Then just a little quick hitter show as we try to get back on a regular schedule.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I haven't been able to watch a ton of pro wrestling here in the last however long, just because I've been busy as well. It's a crazy time of year for me, obviously, being an NFL and NFL draft writer. So NFL scouting combine is next week. The draft is in 2 months. It is go time, and it is a lot of fun to get there. But Fred, let's start off by talking about some of these Observer Awards, and I just want to shout out all the WWE Piss Babies for being so mature about these awards, which, I'm gonna be honest, I thought they did a pretty good job. And the one thing that you learn when you deal with any kind of data set collection is there's wisdom in crowds. There may be outliers that say, hey, this is wrong, or vice versa. But the more people you have, the better evidence you have of what actually is. Because then the outliers start to get filtered out. And that's one of the reasons why, like, you have elections, because, hey, 10 people may think candidate X is the best, but 10 million people pick candidate Y. And whether they're right or wrong, I guess, is a completely different scenario, which I guess is kind of undermining my whole point. But The wisdom crowds theory, and they picked CMLL, and I thought they did they made the right call. CMLL was far and away the best promotion of the year. The only one I'd say would be comparable would be Stardom, and I thought they had a phenomenal year. But Stardom is less mainstream with this voter base than CMLL is, and CMLL, like, Lucha doesn't usually do well in these awards, but when they do, it's because they've earned it. And I completely agree with the selection.
Yeah, I've been writing about the Observer Awards for a few years now, and the treatment of Lucha is typically not great, and I'm glad to see that overturned some this year, because 2025, when you really come down to it, is the story of CMLL and the story of Stardom. It was their year, and they should have gotten the recognition. I'm glad CMLL got what they did. They did get, there was one award they got snubbed on that I think was a pretty bad overlook. And then Stardom did pretty well, especially when you consider that, like, Saya Kamatani had the best Fez Flair finish since, I think, Manami Toyota in the mid-90s. So, pretty good work. But still, I think she clearly should have been second in the Fez Flair, but it wasn't far off, so can't be too mad about that. Like, only 220-some points, so. But yeah, Mystico won Fez Flair by a massive margin, doubled up second place Adam Page, 548 first place vote, which was, I did this math earlier, I did not write it down because I'm smart like that, but Mystico received about 8 fewer first place votes than 2nd through 10th combined, which is pretty damn good. So Adam Page 2nd, Moxley 3rd, Saya Kamatani 4th, John Cena 5th. Kamatani should have been second. I think once you get to third, there's probably like five or so people you could really put there. And I think any of the AEW or WWE names would make some sense. Although Cena is kind of weird given how I know that he helped them business-wise, but he also really was limited by some really bad booking. Like a true once-in-a-generation opportunity that they were like, yeah, what if we just do nothing good with it? What if we do a really bad heel turn?
Yeah, that heel turn was terrible.
Yeah, but I guess the fact that that wasn't late in the year and we got the so-called love letter to pro wrestling, which was it was like a low-level notebook match for me, but the AJ Styles match that got talked about is like the second coming of Christ, which was a little much. Cody Rhodes, I don't think that WWE had a very good year, frankly. I think AEW had a pretty flawed year, but at least the in-ring was at a very high level in general. And I think WWE, with their we don't really care about in-ring thing, comes down to how do people respond to the creative, and I don't think that they responded well to the creative this year. So, I would have liked to, honestly, I guess Paige or Moxley is a good pick for third, but I might have been better to go with someone outside of the big two American companies there. Maybe Saori, I don't know, which would very much be like a pure work rate case, but she had a fantastic year.
You know who had a shockingly good case for Flair Thez? Goto.
Hiroki Goto?
Yeah, he popped some numbers in New Japan. That obviously the surprise IWGP title run, but he drew some real houses for a promotion that really just did not have any stars. And outside of the Tokyo Dome and the Road to Tokyo Dome Gorakin shows, the Tanahashi retirement tour didn't draw. And the big draw of the entire year was Goto. And you can kind of parse out in your head if that was a good enough case or not. But if we're talking about, I don't know if AEW has a good enough case because they had such an up and down year, even though they're a massive promotion in the landscape of professional wrestling, this would have been an interesting discussion point if we would have had it before this we recorded the show and before the awards came out, because I think if you look at Goto's year, it's kind of sneaky good.
I think the second half of the year is kind of the problem there. He kind of, once he misses the G1, he's kind of secondary in the promotion for the most part. So I think that that's kind of the problem, in my opinion. Well, most outstanding, Takeshita 1, Bandido 2nd, Fletcher 3rd. Saori should have been higher. She finished 5th, which is great for a independent Joshi wrestler, but still, it was very distant. Bandido, I don't really see as being a top 3 worker in the year, I don't think. I feel like that's probably too strong, but
yeah,
I think VOW in general tends to be a little more down on Bandido. Now, I had him 4th, actually, on my FSM 50 ballot. I'm not that down on it, but it still felt like it was far more of a serious candidacy than I thought. No real thoughts on that award outside of that. Tag Team of the Year, Young Bucks, FTR, and Bandido in that order in a very close vote. First place was decided by 12 points between the Bucks and FTR, so, very, very close. And King and Bandito were just about 200 points behind. I think El Sky Team, Mystico, Mascara Dorada, and Dion from CMLL should have won. They had the second most first place votes, only 2 behind the Young Bucks, but I think this is a bit of a exposure thing, and people probably not thinking of Trios as a option here. So beyond that, I don't think there are any real contenders in that category. Best on interviews. Who would you have picked for this one? Because I don't think there was a really super strong candidate this year.
My default is usually Jon Moxley, because
yeah, I think
he's so good whenever he talks that if you don't have, like, hey, this guy was just incredible. And I just think the WWE promo style is so limiting in what they are actually able to do that it kind of eliminates them from a lot of these discussions, because they have some great talkers, but you have that stupid cadence where you're treating the audience like they're dumb, that it takes away from me when they're actually really skilled at it. Like, Cody Rhodes is a phenomenal promo, but his WWE promos feel so watered down from what they could be based on his talent that it's really hard for me. Japanese wrestlers are also hard for me because, one, the translations just don't come off the same. And I think able to hear them in the native language and being able to understand in the native language is a barrier. Same with the Lucha guys. But when Moxley talks, the words hit, they penetrate, and he comes across authentic, which is shockingly hard to do in this business. To me, I would have gone Moxley. Hangman was fine, but I couldn't point out a single Hangman promo where I'm like, yeah, he should win interview, the best interviews.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I can point out like five Moxley promos.
Yeah.
Especially the Continental Classic one, which should have been the best thing that resonate in voters' minds when they fill out their ballots. But it didn't happen.
Yeah, it was weird for me that Paige finished so far ahead of this category, but it was Paige, Moxley, and then Tony Storm, and then CM Punk as a close fourth to Tony. I mean, like, I think Mox probably should have won. I think I voted for him. I you know, the Tony Storm thing is a lot of shtick, and I feel like the second half of the year was pretty weak. And I don't watch enough WWE to really comment on Punk or any WWE guys. Like, probably it's just not a style that I typically like. Promotion of the year easily went to CMLL, AEW a distant second, and then Stardom third. Flip Stardom and AEW, I'd be very happy with that. WWE finished fourth despite getting nearly 50 more first place votes than Stardom. So, like, I don't know. Some people need to watch more than just US wrestling. let's see. Best weekly show, Dynamite. I honestly think that award should just go down to voting for one show. Like, people complain about Collision finishing over Raw and SmackDown. People complain about SmackDown all year, WWE fans did. So, like, I don't have much sympathy for that. And it's also third place in a vote for your top three category. Like, who cares? Super Mariners versus CMLL finished second. Match of the year, Omega Kid, Tokyo Dome on January 5th. Closely beating out Bandido at Takeshita at the Ring of Honor show in Texas. And then third was the big all-in-Texas Page and Moxley match. Bisco MJF fourth. Sure, fine.
Mystico MJF being fourth to me feels egregious.
But it got a lot of hype, but I just think it's an exposure thing. The CMLL YouTube is pretty expensive. And see, so I think that limits access.
If I were CMLL, I would have dropped just that match or have AEW drop that match and then link to the whole show or something like a month or two later, just because it's a phenomenal match. And what's the best way to get exposure for your company is to give things away for free. Because hey, this is what you're missing every single week. We have great shit. And like, Mystico's the Wrestler of the Year. You know what CML should do? Oh, the Observer named him Wrestler of the Year. Well, let's put together a 3-hour comp tape, throw it on YouTube. This is our big star. Like, I mean, some of this stuff is pretty basic, but I feel like wrestling is bad at basic nowadays.
CMLL is very immovable on what they do in a lot of ways, and I think that just keeping to their normal YouTube schedule is very much that. So, let's see. US MVP, Moxley, Cena, Page. Again, Cena, I would not have put that high just because, you know, the failed heel run was so long and so notable. Mox is fine. A little surprised that Paige didn't win this one between the two, but I think Mox probably should have won that. That's skis. Skipping back down to a couple more. We'll do the Hodge slash Don Heavyweight MVP, which is a big win by Mystico. So I don't know if I would really count him as a non-heavyweight. But then Darby Allin and Bandito, and then Oscar Dorada and Mike Bailey. So at AEW line, top five, Javon Evans, sixth. Women's Wrestling MVP, Saya Kamatani easily won it over Toni Storm. And then Mercedes Moné, third. Pretty reasonable, I think. Not a great year for feuds, but Paige Moxley won pretty handily, which seems like the obvious one. Kamatani knocked Nakano, which probably I would have picked. I think I voted for that one, actually. And then Mystico MJF, third. Let's take a look here. Most Improved, Harley Cameron. I don't think there was a great candidate this year. I don't know that I'd really say Harley Cameron improved greatly. But I don't have a better candidate offhand. Like, Kyle Fletcher finished second, and I feel like he just did what you would expect from Kyle Fletcher. Kendall Gray, who I think works the WWE Evolve stuff, was third. Then after that, it was a bunch of, like, minor candidates. So, I don't know. I don't know on that one. And then what I thought was maybe the most interesting thing, All in Texas won Show of the Year. And that show was so long. And I feel like the way it was laid out and everything, it really emphasized the length of it. And I think that is just really, I would not have put it first because of that.
Yeah. I didn't have an issue with the length. I was watching it with a buddy, and we were just like, man, it feels like the show's going long, but we were fully engaged the whole time. Nothing, like, sometimes when you have longer shows.
Yeah, the gauntlet matches.
They were early enough where it didn't feel like they were dragging the show down. Like, if you would have had that, one of the gauntlets right before the world title match, okay, I'm with you 100%. But in real time, it's like, it was okay, it was fine. My biggest gripe about it was the fact that my wife got really pissed at the end of that show, because then you and I went live and she was not happy about me watching wrestling for 6 hours and then doing an hour to 2 hour show, even though I asked and she said yes, but that's a whole other discussion. Nobody thought that show was going 6 hours. We thought 4.5 because
six was ridiculous.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that again, but I also am fine with it. In a vacuum, because it was kind of a one-off, and I stayed engaged the whole time, so I didn't have a problem with it. And especially like that last match, it went nearly an hour. The whole, like, from promo package to entrances to match to the celebration, like, whatever. Like, if you lost engagement, I can see you hating it more. I didn't lose engagement the whole time. And I thought it was fine.
It was a very maximal show. And I feel like it was, could have been a little easier, you know, to get through.
Yeah.
And I think that's more or less it. It's all, most disgusting promotional tactic is always fun, which is WWE bringing back Brock Lesnar. WWE is slash TKO is 8 of the top 9.
I'm going to be honest. I thought WWE bringing back Lesnar was not even top three of their most disgusting promotional tactics.
With the accusations,
Well, so if I recall correctly, the accusations were that she was offered to him, but he didn't do anything. Am I right in that?
Only because of a missed flight. So I think there's a lot of questions beyond that. Yeah. I think I kind of remember there being an older incident with him as well, but I honestly can't recall enough right now to say. So
yeah, and I'm not saying it's not disgusting, but considering how they have platformed this president and how Paul Levesque is on this ridiculous health and wellness committee at the White House, and then all of their dealings with Saudi Arabia. To me, everything that they've done it's hard for me to place Lesnar higher than fourth. But in fairness, Fred, that's saying something because they're disgusting.
Yeah, it's a gross company, really. Like politically,
it's a terrible company.
It's bad. It's real bad. They escaped so far.
Did anything directly involving Janelle Grant and the lawsuit other than Brock Lesnar make the list?
Not this year, because it was a quiet year in that lawsuit. Like, they just did a lot of paperwork kind of stuff and never really advanced terribly in any big news. Saudi Arabia relationship was second, Donald Trump relationship was third. And then the Raja Jackson thing, which was really bad, but it was such a small company, fourth. And CM Punk apologizing to Saudi Arabia was fifth.
See, I don't necessarily agree with putting the Roger Jackson thing on there, because it wasn't really a promotional tactic. It was a guy going rogue. So, like, is that fair to use as a promotional tactic? Because they had a plan, like, hey, you're going to do this. And then he went just above and beyond anything that they had planned. To me, that doesn't scream promotional tactic. That screams, you're a chode.
They did not react quickly to stop it or anything, but the worst part of it, I thought, was that, if I recall correctly, they then advertised a follow-up appearance that got canceled because, like, everyone was like, what the hell are you guys doing? So I think that was a concerning thing. Not great, Bob.
Okay. If they advertised the follow-up appearance, we'll give it to him. But based on everything that I knew, it's like, are we sure? But anyways, just biggest promotional or worst promotional tactic, WWE.
Existing.
Exactly. Anything else on the awards, Fred? Anything that popped out to you based on all of your research with historical data?
I haven't dug that far into it. I did see Takeshita. I saw got some discussion on the VOW Discord about if it should have won. And, like, you know, if you disagree with it, you're going to be louder than if you do agree with it, I reckon. And on top of all that, you know, I think he had a pretty clear case for it. I came pretty close to voting for Sari over him, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable stance. But I just, you know, did not dig deep enough into her. Like, I was traveling a lot for the last 2 weeks of the year, and if I had just instead, like, was able to hunker down and only watch wrestling for those 2 weeks, I very easily could have flipped them. Mystico had a super dominant year, obviously, and that is a 20-year gap between his wins for Flair Fez, which is kind of amazing, frankly. Other than that, my point with Keshta, sorry, is that he entered the over 50% of the possible points club, which I think was the 15th person to ever do that in the history of the awards, give or take somewhere around there. So, like, that's pretty impressive. And tag team, I mean, the Young Bucks just continue to extend their lead in the voting for this. One thing I will point out is the people who, like, instantly go, Dave's friends with the Young Bucks, that's why they get the votes. Dave himself wrote in the write-up for the awards that Sky Team should have won, which is the correct opinion. But, that's just kind of absurd. Is people who don't read it, don't comprehend anything, just, like, you know, saying shit, basically.
Yeah, people just need to actually read Dave. Read his work.
Live in dumb hell.
Yeah, media literacy is dog shit. Sucks. What are you going to do?
Yep. Which brings us to... do you have any thoughts on anything else you saw from him? Or?
Not really. I think overall, you can nitpick here, nitpick there. I think Bandido Takeshita was a very good match, but it didn't even make my top 10, so I don't love it at number 2. But yeah. I get it. Like my top 10, like I would have loved to have seen Despy and Jun Kasai in the top 5 because I just thought that match was incredible. But I mean, overall, really, really good job and thorough job by the voters some nitpicky stuff. Like you mentioned, Sai Kamatani being fifth instead of like top two or three for most outstanding, or was it Fleur Fez? I can't remember. Either one, you could have her easily top two or three. But I just think Joshi is going to be a relative blind spot for this voter base. And the fact that she still finished top five, I thought was tremendous.
Yeah, that part is impressive. And I am hopeful that in time that this will boost the visibility of it. And so, that Stardom will get a better shake going forward. But, fingers crossed on that.
Well, considering Stardom's year, and they're really pushing a lot of these younger wrestlers. And by younger, I mean not Starlight Kid, who's 24. But like
the grizzled young vets.
Yeah, I'm
move really over Drayton Gibson. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Galtieri here.
Fingers crossed that they keep getting more exposure and more great stuff going on there.
I think they will.
So Grand Slam Australia, nice little collision. I thought it was a great show. Like a really good. For TV, like a 8.5 out of 10. Just great action delivered on everything it built up. I thought the weakest match was the mixed tag, unsurprisingly.
It wasn't bad.
Like, no, it was like in my mind, and I know that I probably don't use the term right, like it was originally intended, but it was a gentleman's three. Like, just like, yeah, you worked well. It was a little sticky for me, but still enjoyed it. So, and it was
a 3.25.
That's fair.
I really thought the pile driver to Tony through the table toward the beginning of the match, and then going
not through.
I think that was a really good spot in the match.
Yeah.
Because then sets you up for the commercial break, and then it sets her up for the triumphant return. I think the post-match was better because Wheeler was trying to be a baby about it and run away. Mox is like, a disappointed dad, no, take it. This is what you wanted. Take it. Do it. And, I thought it worked out pretty well overall. Look, you got Tony on the show. She got to be a big star. She got to put away Yuta. And we pay off Yuta with that shitty haircut. I just good classic pro wrestling, no frills, no bullshit. I do want to continue to give credit to AEW because I think they're just using Marina Shafir in the best way possible. And they really have not strayed from it since she joined Moxley to form the Death Riders.
She's been in perfectly.
Yeah. And the matches that she's been in have been laid out to her strengths, which I think is more important because when she came into the company, they were trying to do like just normal singles matches. And that's just not her thing. Let her be a brawler. Let her just be a badass and an ass kicker. And it works out. Like, they don't do everything right. And there's plenty that they don't. Marina Shafir is one of their best success stories of the last 18 months. Somebody who barely deserved a second of screen time to every time you see her, she's kind of become must watch because of her presence and how they've used her to just maximize what she's good at.
I know that she worked a few times this year, but going back to the awards real quick, I think that maybe she should have done better in best non-wrestler.
Yeah. Don Callis winning was good though.
Yeah, Callis should have won. I think Heyman was second, which, is just like the WWE default. And it's really a thin field. But, I think Shafir actually, now that I think about it some, should have done better because she really was key, I think, to the Death Riders act working. I know that she worked pretty regularly, actually, especially once the women's tag thing became a deal. But, I think she... she was fantastic in that role, and so we can debate the eligibility, but I think she would have been a viable candidate for that if she, if you don't think she wrestled enough to be here.
Where do you want to go else with this show, Fred?
Let's get to the main event, which was Birdie King MJF. I thought they delivered a nice match. It was like a 4-star, real low level notebook for me. Just a really solid match. Birdie King came off great, I think, as the challenger. MJF gave him a lot, but came at, you know, won pretty much clean. And yeah, I mean, hopefully we don't have Brody just like slide back down the card like we see with some of the sometimes with up and comers in AEW. I just hope he doesn't get on that Daniel Garcia treadmill. But I think that their usage of him the past few weeks has been fantastic, and I am excited to see what comes next.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that with all the stuff surrounding President Trump and the potential merger and acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery, which we do now know officially two confirmed reports that Warner Brothers Discovery does own a negligible percentage of All Elite Wrestling, which is less than 10%, does not need to be reported if it's less than 10. Mm-hmm. So that got confirmed. Shout out WrestleNomics Brandon Thurston, who has basically been saying this for what, 2, 3, 4, 5 years now?
Yeah, he's been maybe on longer. He's on top of it for sure. Yeah.
Look, if you want the best wrestling business coverage, WrestleNomics Patreon, you're not going to get better than what you'll get from Brandon Thurston, who used to have the WrestleNomics show on this network. But I thought it was interesting. They aired the Fuck Eyes chants after the controversy earlier in the week, which is a bunch of, it made sense and it made no sense at the same time. But I found it interesting because this was a tape show. The camera cut. Right after the bell rang, you hear the Fuck Eyes chants. There's a camera cut of Brody King that was very unnatural. And I found that piece a little interesting. I don't know what was going on, but the camera cut felt odd, felt off to me. Where he's just kind of standing from a distance, and then all of a sudden he's just pounding his chest. And it didn't feel like a fluid transition. So I found that interesting. It's probably a nothing burger, but I thought I'd mention it.
Yeah, very interesting. If so, just a very minor point, I guess, really, when you get down to it. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very good match, good main event. You know, we were moving on to MJF Adam Page right away, like in the immediate post-match, and we'll see how that goes, and we'll see how Brody is booked moving forward. Other highlight, I mean, we have to talk about Mark Briscoe and his death wish for that ladder match with Kyle Fletcher, because damn, that guy took some bumps.
Yeah, he did. Really, yeah, he insane. Did. Ladder matches are way too overexposed. I thought it was cool that Kyle Fletcher referenced the Game 7. And then they did the ladder match, which is what they did with the Trios titles with, I can't even, it was the Elite versus
Death Triangle.
Oh, God, such an elite stable name, Death Triangle. I love that. But They had their Game 7 in Los Angeles, in a ladder match. So I thought the continuity there, little detail, but little details matter. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. So when you have a Game 7, ladder match is kind of going to be the default. And I think if they continue to use ladder matches sparingly, which is frustrating in itself, because I think AEW does a good job with ladder matches where they don't overexpose them. But ladder matches as a whole are massively overexposed because WWE uses them way too often. So does TNA. And by a collective whole, ladder matches are just overexposed.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a really good job of making this feel not like a standard ladder match where it's just, oh, we're going to do our basic ladder spots. They did some crazy shit. They did some really cool stuff on the apron that wasn't a ladder match involved, but it was in the course of the match. And I thought it was a brilliant construction of the match to maximize both wrestlers and also having Fletcher get a very convincing victory. I don't think you could have had much better considering the situation and the circumstances surrounding what the ladder match has become in pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this is fantastic. And I mean, just really a great, great match. And if I understand the whole burnout thing with ladder matches, because they really have become, especially in U.S. wrestling, just like an easy button. You know, like, fans will pop for this, and then we can also get out a table and they'll pop for that, and blah, blah, blah. But this was just fantastic. So it's great. It's fantastic. So a strong recommendation on that one. One of the best matches I've seen so far this year. 4.5 stars in my book.
Yeah, 4.5 easy. I don't love the fact that we now have another custom title belt. And maybe this is just a boomer complaint, but man, what is this, like the 8th iteration of the TNT title?
Yeah.
Man, this is not SmackDown versus Raw 2006. Like, I wish that we would not have all these custom titles, but you know what? Maybe I'm just old.
It's, you could definitely do it too much, I think, so.
I agree.
But elsewhere on the card, I thought the women's tag team championship match was like respectable, but not great. And I thought that both the opener with Mox and Takeshita and Andrade and Adam Page were really good low-level notebook matches. Great work in both of them. I like the – I'm looking forward to what they do next with Mox and Takeshita, because I assume they're going to follow up on this, because how do you not? But I thought both really did their jobs well, and I liked them both. Paige got a nice win to set up the MJF challenge, and Paige and Takeshita will probably wrestle again.
Did you see somebody was floating around a YouTube or a Twitter clip that apparently Mox was like set up Takeshita getting his heat back with the I don't know, it's a Falcon Arrow, whatever he calls his finisher. But he goes to the ref and says, hey, tell Takeshita to hit his finisher. And they got the heat back in the building, because the building was pretty deflated after that match.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really nice veteran move.
We don't talk enough about how smart Mox is as a worker.
It's hilarious because he comes off like he's just an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at him, you don't think that this guy's just absolutely brilliant. But then I got the audio version of his book, his biography. He's a very smart guy. It's just comes in a rough looking exterior.
Oh yeah. He's a great ugly wrestler, which he really isn't that ugly, but he is a good ugly wrestler with all the bleeding and everything when he does it. But, I mean, mm-hmm. he just has a genius level idea of like laying stuff out. And I thought the early Death Rider stuff did not work well, but they really adjusted that well once they were just like, yeah, we're just going to be a heel group. Let's stop pretending we're going to like, let's stop hitting the like, well, we're changing what AEW is stuff. And it was great. I loved it. I love his mind. He just has a perfect idea of what pro wrestling should be.
He really does. And I love that in a world of clean shaven bodies, that Mox just looks like he rolled out of bed and is ready to fight you. I love that. It's such a simple touch. But we went through this entire era of wanting your muscles to pop as much as humanly possible.
Oh, yeah. And WWE looking like exclusively for pretty boys and stuff like that. And like
shaving and tanning. And now Mox is like, nah, I'll fight you. And it feels so real and authentic. And that's why I think his character goes over so well, because you believe that this is actually John Moxley. You believe that he is about what he talks about. Though, and the intelligence just continues to pop across the board. I love it. Did Moxley get into the Hall of Fame yet, or did he just miss again? I can't remember.
Not yet, I don't think. I'll double check that, but I mean, he's gonna get it, and he has to. And I've been voted for him for at least 2 years now, I think, but it's just so obvious that he is special, he really is.
Mm hmm. Yeah, it's
2025 results right now. He did not get voted in yet.
Yeah, boo. He
has reached 32% of the vote. as of last year. So I think he will eventually get there. I think he may actually be hurt a little bit by coming on just a touch too soon, because I don't think he was quite ready 2023, but 2024 on, I think he's been a clear should be in.
I think Dave should readjust when he puts these guys on.
He put something in the award issue about how he, like, there's now a 2-year minimum, which I think is too little still, but I mean, you know.
Here's what I mean. I like the thresholds that he has. You have to have been a pro wrestler for what, 20 years and be 35, something like that. Like, whatever his thresholds are, I think are fine. But that doesn't mean you have to add them to the ballot the second they turn 35.
Yeah.
I think when the discussion is truly warranted to add them, that's when you should add them to the ballot, not when they hit the age threshold.
I think you have to meet that. You could wait till like 37 or 38 sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, Seth Rollins has become a personal issue for me because he, my God, he got on 2021, dropped off, 2023, dropped off, and then this year he like was one vote away from being dropped off again, you know. If he just got at it for the first time in 2025, I think just the whole tenor of the conversation would be different. But
yeah. I agree. It's Moxley went on just a little too early. And I think if you would have just went on this year, I think there would be a lot more real discussion about him rather than just, oh, we're going to retread the discussion from last year and just talk about a couple little details. No, let's have a real talk about John Moxley. I wish we would have been able to do that, but that's just not the nature of what the Hall of Fame is right now. And I hope it evolves to a point where we get there.
Fingers crossed.
Hey, you have the power, Fred. I believe in you.
Well, that's pretty much all I really had on as far as notes for Grand Slam Australia. I thought it was a really enjoyable show, and just a blast, really. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I think this company's heading in the right direction. I feel a little bit reinvigorated with wrestling because I just haven't been super passionate about it over the course of the past few months. And I think everything that they're doing is kind of putting them in the right direction. Oh, we did not talk about the women's tag team match. We should do that.
Oh, I thought it was, I mentioned quickly, I just thought it was all right. I didn't love it, but I don't think it was a disaster or anything. I think it was like, I went 2.5 on it.
I mean,
it was an interesting title change, I thought.
They didn't change the title.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I was thinking about the Chris Statlander title change earlier on
that tackle match rocked.
I still haven't got to it.
Awesome.
I am the one not watching wrestling.
I will give you the general synopsis without actually ruining the match. The one thing I love about AEW is they don't treat women's wrestlers like women. They treat them like wrestlers. They let them do things creatively. And in the American landscape for so long, women were just treated like second-class wrestlers, where they weren't allowed to do the same things as the men. They weren't allowed. Like Mercedes Moné had talked about how she didn't want to like practice matches going into that that NXT Brooklyn match with Bayley because she didn't want to be told she couldn't do something because the men wanted to do it or something like that. It was along those lines. AEW just lets the women be wrestlers. They don't hold them back. They like, oh, you want to do this? Go ahead. A strap match? And Statlander blood buckets? Hell yeah. Let them be wrestlers. Wrestlers understand the danger with all this stuff. They are not stupid. And the fact that AEW just lets them be wrestlers, I think is tremendous. And we're getting some of the best stuff with the death match that they do, with the whatchamacallit, with the violent stuff. It's awesome. Keep doing it. Keep letting these women push their own boundaries. Let them just be wrestlers. I think it's great. And I went 4.5 on that strap match. I thought it was awesome.
I really need to watch it. I've heard fantastic things about it. And that little promo package they aired for it was fantastic too. So, I mean, I just need to sit down.
I was spoiled on the match, but the second I saw Tekla's entrance, I knew she was winning. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, this like Statlander did not have a boo-boo face, but you could tell that they like Tekla's entrance. She is winning this, and they did tremendous job across the board.
And great Tekla promo too on that video package. Mm-hmm. And I thought Stat, who I think is sometimes an awkward promo, did pretty well on that too. So. Kudos to her as well. So,
yeah, go back and watch it, Fred. It's if you haven't watched it, it's worth your time. I promise. I think that's gonna do it, Fred. Not a whole ton to talk about right now.
Yeah, I mean, we missed Powerhouse Hobbs leaving. We missed Jake something getting his name changed and then his bicep torn.
yeah, that sucked.
Terrible timing, man. I. Jake Doyle, that act looked like it was going to be fantastic, and poor Mark Davis too. You know, him just really awful injury luck as well. Now with another guy, so I'm looking forward to recording more regularly and being able to cover this promotion.
You and me both. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, ring the bell for notifications, and.
Red Circle or what the hell ever.
Yeah, redcircle.com / the, I think, the good, the bad, and the hungry. Thank you guys so much. Take care. Bye.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts as we cover everything. From New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.